Hello, everybody on the second row. You can finally see your faces well. Good morning. The word for beginning in Greek is archi, and it's an ancient word. Its roots go back to the idea of a beginning, but also to the idea of something primary or noble. All those are contained in the word archi: beginning, primary, noble, and commanding. And the beginning of a ministry, I think, makes sense of that relationship of everything that's brought together in the word archi, those seemingly disparate roots, because so often the start of something important does come with noble hopes. And I know that you and I carry such hopes. This means that in the midst of all the energy and to-dos and plans and meetings and ministry that we have begun together, this is a tender time for us. Each of us is seeking and intending to know and learn the other. Each is treasuring high hopes and likely also a little baggage. Each believing that together we will be good and good for each other, that the church will be better for our union, that we will help each other, and that we will be a help to many in this time within and beyond these walls. We believe it is so. May it be so. That tenderness is particular to us and this circumstance of beginning a new ministry together, and it's also not particular to us, not even particular to the beginning of any ministry. It is often the situation also when anyone comes to church or temple or a mosque for the first time. People come in not knowing others, unsure of their welcome, unsure if they belong, sometimes unsure if they even want to belong, sometimes careful of the wounds they carry from past faiths or past congregations, sometimes mindful that inside or out, they may not seem like those that they see around them in the space. And still, we all come. And I know we don't usually talk or maybe even think about it this way, but it takes courage to come to church, especially, but not only, for the first time. Strangers are vulnerable. And this is why there are countless stories, time out of mind, about the sacred task of hospitality and the sacred gifts that come with hospitality well offered and well received. The music that we've heard this morning referenced some of it, and you may remember the legend of the old and impoverished couple, Baucis and Philemon. Everyone's like, no. Baucis and Philemon, come on, guys. Baucis and Philemon were visited by the gods Zeus and Hermes. The gods came disguised as poor travelers. Now people are like, oh, right. Zeus and Hermes had already tried other homes throughout the village, and no one would give them food or a place to rest. But Baucis and Philemon, in the poorest and smallest house, did. Because that's what you do when a visitor comes to your door seeking shelter. They even offered to cook up their last goose until it fled to safety in Zeus's lap. And eventually, Baucis, the wife, noticed that no matter how many times she filled her guest's cups with the last of her wine, her pitcher was never empty. She and Philemon realized then that their guests were gods, and they raised their hands in supplication and awe. But Zeus and Hermes reassured them to have no fear. They said their generosity and piety were redemptive. The rest of the town would be wiped out. But they would be saved. And the elderly couple climbed up the hills nearby as the gods directed, and they turned to see the town flooded and gone. A temple appeared where their home had been. They asked to serve at the temple the rest of their lives, and when they died, the two became an intertwined pair of trees, a linden and an oak, evermore. Now, oftentimes, old stories don't really sit well with modern morals, and that is certainly true in this case. An entire town shouldn't be killed. simply because they are selfish and unwelcoming. But the point of the story, yeah, I just want to get us past that. Because the point of the story, then and now, was never about the town. It was about the sacredness. And I mean that word seriously. So please don't take it lightly. The sacredness of welcoming a stranger. And the fact that when we welcome a stranger, we too will be changed by that experience. Welcome is fundamentally relational. It is a two-way street. And well offered, it helps the host, changes the host as much as the visitor. So while I definitely don't subscribe to all the elements of the Baucis and Philemon story, I couldn't agree more with that point from my own modern perspective. Because the point of welcome, in my mysteriously titled sermon this morning, The Point of Welcome, or A Secret History of I-95, I'm sure you guys were like, well, I have no idea what she's talking about. The point of welcome, the goal of hospitality, isn't hospitality itself. It is what hospitality makes possible. And I said this in my sermon write-up for the newsletter, so if you read that, I kind of gave away my point already. Deep welcome makes possible trust and connection, relationship, community, even love, even justice, even peace. Figuring out how to offer welcome in all the ways that it is needed can be a challenge. In my experience, it is a challenge. But it is so worth it because the truths and people and communion that unfold in the wake of welcome well offered and well received may amaze us. And I think I'm getting theoretical here, so let me ground this for you in a couple of stories. After college, I lived in Greece and taught English there for a few years. And while I was there, I developed strong ties to a small village near Kalamata, which is, yes, where the olives come from. The first time I was visiting there, a small and deeply wrinkled old woman dressed all in black beckoned me into her house, and she sat me down in her kitchen. And her house wasn't wired for electricity. And so it was fairly hard to see because there was only one window in the room for light. And I had never met her. I didn't know her name. She lifted a doily off of a jug and she poured me a glass of what turned out to be water from it. And then she opened an old jar of small dark things in a clear, thick, viscous sauce. And she put a couple on a plate for me, and she pushed them over to me with a fork to eat them with. There they lay, gleaming wetly. They were bigger than olives, clearly not olives, utterly mysterious. And I hadn't learned much Greek yet, and so we really couldn't communicate, and I had no idea what these things were, but it was obvious that I needed to eat them. And I was raised to eat what I was given. So I dug into the soft, dark food, each about as big as a gigantic date, but also clearly not a date. And I brought it to my mouth. I didn't know if it was a fruit, a vegetable, something worse. It looked a little like a giant slug. And you know, there is escargot after all, so who knew what this was? And I bit into it, and I chewed, and it was, I still didn't know. Surprisingly soft, a little slimy, extremely sweet, drenched in what was turning out to be some kind of syrup. What I didn't know at the time was that to refuse food in someone's home is an insult in Greece. It suggests that you don't think their food is good enough for you. In those humble circumstances, it is definitely how that would have come across to my hostess. Eventually, a friend came and found me and translated a conversation which was the beginning of a surprising and delightful friendship. Anna was an old and childless widow, full of interest in the world and in youth, and we enjoyed each other enormously. Over time, I learned about her life, about village life, about utterly different understandings of the world and people from Anna. Also, my friend did tell me what I was eating, which was candied baby eggplant, Anna's specialty. Learning to see with another's eyes is part of what comes from welcome. When welcome, well offered, and well received becomes relationship. Learning to see with another's eyes is something we're talking about all the time now, right? As we contend with white privilege and the limits of identity and perception, we all understand more and more that our perspective is not the only one. And that, in fact, we cannot see as much. We cannot see truly when we see only from our perspective. What looks empty to some, silence, a landscape, looks full to others. What looks simple to some, a time of day, a road, looks complex to others. So much has changed for me because of what I have learned from others who have different experiences and understandings, even maybe especially regarding elements that I thought I knew. Music, worship, silence, even sometimes the most mundane things. I have driven I-95 more times than I can count. I have driven it in the middle of the night. I have driven it during countless rush hours. I have driven it in every season. I have driven it with friends and with family and too many times alone. I have driven it in cars and in trucks, and most recently for 12 hours straight at 50 miles an hour, pulling a trailer behind me while minding an unstable kayak on the roof. I can go to sleep on I-95 if someone else is driving, and wake up later and recognize exactly where we are without seeing any signs. That's how well I know this road. For most of my life, I-95 was the familiar, ugly, crowded, and most direct way to get back and forth from home. And that was about it. But that was changed for me when a member of the Silver Spring Unitarian Universalist Church, an elderly woman who grew up, she's black, and she grew up in the Jim Crow South, and she told me about I-95. She was a former member of another Unitarian Universalist church with a long tradition of multicultural, multiracial commitment. And Silver Spring at the time was new in its commitment, but she had moved to very near the church and she was interested in joining. But she didn't want to join if the church wasn't going to walk our talk about building multicultural, multiracial community there. And she spent years attending and even volunteering regularly. Years before she finally joined. She needed that long arc of time of inhabiting, and let's be clear, not just inhabiting, but testing and evaluating the reality of the welcome at that church in order to make her commitment in return for the churches. Eventually she joined, and I started to learn about her life. And along the way, she told me what it meant when I-95, that federal road, was built so many decades ago in the Deep South. A new road, a road people of color could drive without being afraid of what might happen to them if they had to stop for any reason on that road. Because I-95 was subject not to local police and state troopers, but to federal law and federal investigators. Think about that. Sit with that for a minute. I-95. changed their lives, was one of the most powerful gifts they ever received. A highway. And a highway I have known all my life and often loathed is now charged with entirely new meaning about justice and about freedom and about safety and about hope when I see it through the eyes of someone else's experience. In the end, welcome is, in some ways, a manifestation of grace. Grace is such an interesting theological term. Grace is a favor, a gift or an indulgence freely bestowed by one who need not do so. My favorite definition of grace comes from the folk singer-songwriter David Wilcox, who once said at a concert, "Grace is the bridge that is built to us from the other side." Grace is the bridge that is built to us from the other side. However we define how or from where grace comes, the crux of it is that grace comes to us unbidden. We cannot make or invoke or earn grace, howsoever hard we might try. Regardless, in fact, of whether or not we deserve it, grace comes as and if and when it comes. And that's that. True welcome is also like that. It is offered to us, not earned by us. And we receive and accept it graciously, even when we feel unsure. So in the end, we must seek to offer welcome, real welcome, deep welcome, not because it reflects well on us, or makes us feel better about ourselves, or because it is expected or polite, or we are people pleasers, but because, or because it may increase our membership or diversify our membership. We must offer deep welcome in every way we can because it is a part of how we manifest grace and part of how we connect to each other and part of how we save each other and are saved by each other. We gain when we connect. Our welcome grows us all as individuals, the welcomer and the welcomed, the host as well as the stranger. We are all made more, made whole. Regardless of numbers or expectations or any external measures, we are made whole through welcome. At General Assembly, at the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly many years ago, Philadelphia poet laureate Sonia Sanchez addressed a gathering of Unitarian Universalist ministers, and among the many stories she told us was this. She was coming home around 1 a.m. from work to the sketchy neighborhood in Philadelphia where she lives. And Sonia Sanchez is a very small, tiny, older woman. And she had with her a briefcase, and her bulky purse. Suddenly, at the far end of the dimly lit block she was walking, she saw a young man, maybe 17 years at most, walking in her direction. And she saw him notice her from the far end of the block and stop and look both ways and see that no one else was on the street. And then she saw him pip back up and start coming towards her with intent. And he was coming towards her, and she ran to him. She ran to him, and she threw her arms around him, and she said, "Oh, my brother, I am so glad you're here. Now you can walk me safely home." And he did. And she sat on the stairs with him, when they got her home, and she asked him why he was out so late, and he said, "Got no job, out looking for stuff to do." And she said, "There is no life for you here, out late at night. There is no life for you, only death." They grew into relationship that night. Eventually, she found him a job at Temple University where she worked. That is deep, spiritual, human brilliance and transformation, because she welcomed him on that empty street. She welcomed him, and she saved herself, and she saved the youth. She utterly changed a moment and lives by declaring kinship. She took a stranger, and she made him a brother. Defying the potential of unfamiliarity to shape that moment, she welcomed him and honored their, our, shared humanity. All the ways that we are more alike than we are unlike. Her story lifts up the extraordinary power of welcome. Everywhere we go, especially here, we can diminish each other and strangers that we meet, or we can raise each other up and declare kinship. We have incredible power for good, transformational power for good. And there are uncountable ways to welcome that only need us to discern them and enact them to bring us closer, step by powerful step, welcome by deep welcome to the world that we don't just dream about, to the world we make real, our world. Amen.